Thank you. Be seated. Court is ready to hear oral argument in the cause of Cecil Martin versus Gulf Insurance Group. We have allotted 15 minutes for each side to present oral argument and 5 minutes for rebuttal. And we are ready to hear from the petitioner.
May it please the court, Mr. Gary Johnson will present argument for the petitioner.
May it please the court. On December 10, 1985, Clem Cecil Martin received an on-the-job injury when he fell from a sawhorse straddling a 2x6 board and injured his right testicle. He had swelling after that, which continued and got worse to a point that approximately 40 days later, he finally sought medical care with Dr. James Fralick, a family practitioner in Bonham, Texas. It was initially diagnosed as orchitis or epididymitis and treated with medication. However, as Mr. Martin's health deteriorated, he finally went back to the doctor in May of 1986, whereupon it was found that he indeed was suffering from testicular cancer. And this workers' compensation lawsuit ensued, alleging that the trauma was an aggravating or inciting cause of the cancer and that the $51,000 in medical bills he incurred for treatment of cancer were indeed related to the injury. The lawsuit there was then tried, and after 7.5 hours of deliberation, the jury returned a verdict saying that no incapacity resulted from the injury, that they did indeed find, but that medical bills were necessary as a result of the injury. Plaintiffs sought the judgment on the verdict, seeking the $51,713.06 in medical bills, but the plaintiff's motion for judgment was denied, and the court entered a take-nothing judgment against the plaintiff. What we're here about primarily is the stipulations entered in during the trial between the two parties, the stipulations regarding the medical bills. Of course, the stipulations are the purposes to streamline the trial as well as to effectuate the purpose and intent of the parties. I would like to focus the court's attention to the intent of the parties regarding the stipulations. There were numerous medical bills incurred by this young man for treatment of cancer in excess of $51,000. The purpose of the stipulations was to get around the burdensome task of proving up each medical bill individually and going through the necessary language of necessity and reasonableness. During the stipulation process itself, Mr. Friend, attorney for Gulf Insurance, told the court, "We still intend to have an issue with regard to that as to whether or not the injury in any way was associated with the incurrence of those bills." I myself, during the stipulation process before the court, stated to the court, "The issue will still be before them as to whether or not it is related to the injury in question. So I'd like some sort of either in the charge or the stipulation before the jury that these are the bills for the treatment of cancer. That's all I'm asking." Then the stipulation again was gone into before the jury itself. The only medical bills presented during the testimony of the plaintiff as well as the entire trial, the only medical bills were the ones referred to on exhibit number one, which is the chart. The only medical treatment brought before the jury during the trial phase was for the treatment of the cancer, the bills that were stipulated to.
Counsel, was there any stipulation or question submitted or requested concerning the amount of medical expenses from the injury?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Was there any stipulation?
As to the...
Or issue requested or submitted concerning the amount of money for the medical expenses that are connected to the injury?
No, there was no stipulation as to the injury. That all the bills that were stipulated to were the only treatment this young man received, period, Your Honor. And that's what the stipulation went to. That's why there was no issue requested from the jury as to how much, because the amount and the bills had been already stipulated to.
The stipulation went to the bills as being a result of the cancer.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But there was no stipulation that the bills were as a result of the injury.
That's correct, Your Honor. But the only evidence before the jury were these bills in issue and the treatment resulting that caused these bills to be incurred. The Gulf itself, on two separate occasions, both before the jury and before the trial court, admitted that there was the only evidence as to medical bills were those related to the stipulation itself, that is the $51,000 in change. For instance, Mr. Friend, on behalf of Gulf, in his closing argument to the jury on volume 5 of the record, page 493, said, "And do you find that medical care was reasonably required by Clem C. Martin as a result of the injury? No, not the injury, the cancer." Then, in its response to plaintiff's motion for judgment and motion to modify, Gulf again states, quote, "The only evidence presented with reference to medical bills incurred, the only evidence presented was with reference to medical bills incurred in the treatment of the cancer."
Is all that cut against you?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. That's exactly why we're here. The only evidence before the trial court and before the jury was the medical bills stipulated to, and we are asking that Gulf honor that stipulation and that they be held to the stipulation, because the stipulations are binding not only on the parties, but the trial court and the appellate courts as well.
But you're missing a link. The link is whether or not those bills resulted from any liability found by the jury. You've got an injury, but you say that the bills didn't relate to the injury. They related to cancer.
No, Your Honor, I misstated if I said that. The question was,
the spirit just asked you, there was a stipulation that the bills were for cancer, but no stipulation the bills were for the injury, and you answered, that's right.
But our point is that the jury found that reasonable medical care was required because of the injury that they found. That was the issue presented to them. The only evidence before the jury, the only evidence for the jury of any medical treatment and medical bills were those stipulated to.
Well, but there was no stipulation that there was a connection between the two. In fact, that was expressly reserved by both the plaintiff and the defendant in their stipulation.
That's right. The issue being presented as to asking the jury whether or not a medical care was reasonably necessary for the injury. Yes, that was their answer. Therefore, there was no need for an issue as to the amount of the medical bills because they had been stipulated to. There was the issue is whether there was any evidence of any other treatment for the injury. There was none. The only treatment was that he received was for the treatment of the cancer, and the bill stipulated too.
What about the jury finding that there was an injury, but that the injury was not a producing cause of total or partial incapacity?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Speak to that as to how it helps you.
Yes, yes, Your Honor. The Court of Appeals saw this as an apparent conflict and attempted to resolve it using the Luna test on conflict. At the same time, however, we would say that the court misapplied the Luna test because there is a way you can resolve the apparent conflict with the jury's two answers as to no incapacity and the loss of and the medical bills incurred, Your Honor. Specifically, Mr. Friend had questioned his expert witness about whether or not Mr. Martin could work. In effect, on volume 4, page 335 of the record during direct examination of Gulf's oncologist by Mr. Friend, question, once chemotherapy starts, can a person work? Answer, we encourage that, yes. Question, and can a person do construction work? Answer, yes. In other words, and also in his closing argument, again on page 493 of volume 5, Mr. Friend argues that he wasn't totally incapacitated. This was a healthy young man that didn't look sick. He's a big, strong, robust young man, and who hadn't got into the bad stages of cancer yet, but had gone through some chemotherapy treatment. And you could resolve the apparent conflict just by the fact the jury may have indeed bought Mr. Friend's argument that although he had cancer, he wasn't incapacitated.
Counsel, doesn't incapacity in a workers' compensation context refer to the individual's right to draw weekly benefits after he's been off work for at least 8 continual days?
Well, incapacity goes to the definition of inability to get and keep them. A job doing the ordinary task of a worker, Your Honor, and that's what the question was submitted
so
to the...
not every accidental injury produces incapacity to work and labor, but can produce medical expenses.
That's exactly right, Your Honor. And under Article 8306, Section 6 of the Workers' Compensation Act, it specifically goes to that. The carrier still owes medical bills despite incapacity. And in other words, you don't have to have incapacity in order for the carrier to be responsible for the medical bills for an on-the-job injury.
But they only owe the medical bills for the injury.
That's correct, Your Honor. Mm-hmm. And the bills before the court and the jury had been stipulated to. In other words,
if the stipulation had either been this was the amount of medical bills you owe that were incurred as a result of the injury, or there had been a jury finding that his injury resulted in the necessity for medical treatment because of cancer. I mean, either one of those would have linked these two up, clearly. But now we have sort of a leap of faith in
that. Well, Your Honor, yeah, in retrospect, that would have cleared things up. But we had the stipulation, and the only evidence, again, before the jury was for the treatment and the bills that were stipulated to. Had there been another treatment, had there been injury treatment before the jury, then we wouldn't be here today. But there wasn't.
Well, the jury only found that that medical care was required. Should have had it.
Mm-hmm.
The result of the injury.
Found it was necessary, yes.
And they didn't find that any occurred.
No, sir. But they found that it was necessary, and the only medical treatment he got were those reference to the bills that were stipulated to.
Is there any kind of finding that the cancer was a result of the injury?
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor.
There's a failure to find. Yeah. That's the problem.
Well, Your Honor, there was just questions about incapacity submitted to the jury. No direct question about the relationship between the cancer and the trauma itself.
Yeah, how in the world can you expect to win without that causal connection?
Because of the stipulation, Your Honor.
Explain it to me.
Yes. For example, the Court of Appeals, the Dallas Court of Appeals, attempted to get around the jury's finding in question number 8 about the necessity of medical bills by saying, well, perhaps the jury inferred or found that there was some treatment not before them. Again, I make an effort to justify the two apparently conflicting findings of the jury, but there is no evidence. Indeed, the evidence is quite clear and unequivocal that the only medical treatment he sought and received were with reference to medical bills stipulated to.
Well, now, wait a minute. He sought medical treatment for what he thought was the fall.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Once he got in there, he didn't receive any for the fall because there was such a much more.
Right. The treatment he actually received was not for the fall, but it was for the cancer. Not for the fall itself, but for the cancer. The bills that he received, again, were stipulated to by opposing counsel. Now, we're here asking them to be bound by their stipulation. Had there been no stipulation, another issue would have been submitted as to the amount of the bills.
Does the record reflect when they discovered the testicular cancer, whether or not there were any tumors in the abdomen?
Your Honor, there was the record reflects that in May of 1986, there was some tumors in the chest and lung area, as well as the tumor itself in the testicle. So it had metastasized by then. It's interesting to note that Gulf, in its brief to this court, fails to adopt the Court of Appeals attempt to reconcile the conflicting issues. That is, the Court of Appeals attempt to say that there must have been, or the jury could have inferred other injury treatment. Gulf does not adopt that, but rather hangs their hat on the fact that, well, the jury must have inferred that the July 20, 1986 treatment by Dr. Frelich was what they were talking about. Again, that's flawed because that was one of the bills that was stipulated too. So, again, the only evidence before the jury is for the treatment received by this young man for the cancer, and therefore the amount of $51,713.06 is due if this party is to be bound by the stipulation. Again, we would request the court that parties are going to stipulate into facts and that they be bound by them. We were trying to streamline the trial, and indeed we did so by doing this. And indeed, there was no issue about medical bills because the amount of medical bills because they were stipulated too. The other issue we're here today is whether or not the failure of Gulf to request or file a motion to disregard the jury's answer to question number 8 constitutes a waiver. Pursuant to Rule 301 of the Rules of Procedure, the court cannot on its own initiative disregard an issue. It must be pursuant to a motion filed by a party, and Gulf has failed to do so. Therefore, we would submit to the court that any argument as to the lack of evidence or sufficiency of the evidence as to the question number 8 has been waived by Gulf by its failure to file a motion of disregard.
As I understand it, the cancer was not discovered the first time he went for treatment.
That's correct, Your Honor. It was a preliminary diagnosis of orchitis or epididymitis.
So, I mean, isn't there a window there where the jury could have found that that treatment was necessitated by the fall?
There would be, Your Honor, except that that treatment and that bill was stipulated to as part of the treatment of cancer by the other side. And that's the flaw in their argument. Had they not stipulated, had they said that $40 bill or Dr. Frelick's treatment was not part of it, we don't stipulate to that, then again, we wouldn't be here today. And there would have been
a situation where each trial counsel thinks they tricked the other one, and we're up here to try to figure out
No, Your Honor, not by any stretch of imagination. I certainly wasn't attempting to trick anybody. As a matter of fact, it was the court in chambers and the charge conference who suggested there was no need for the amount to be submitted to the jury of the medical bills because it was stipulated to. So, and that's why we're here today.
So it's the judge's fault.
Oh, no. Well, that's not a record, Your Honor.
Yes, epididymitis in most cases is a very painful but not a long-lasting injury. What were the total medical bills related solely to the treatment of epididymitis?
I believe the initial charge, it was approximately $40 with the Dr. Frelick.
Yeah. Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Robert Allen will present argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Bob Allen here on behalf of Gulf Insurance Company. And let me just start by saying it's a mighty exciting day for me to be here. First time I've appeared as a oral advocate before the court.
She looks so good.
Lost about 10,000 years, I think, in the last 5 years and grown a little bit down here. And in light of the profound statistics that would indicate a reversal of this case by virtue of the fact that you granted the application for writ of error, I could only wish that the court would have had my first appearance on on one of my applications for writ of error as a petitioner and not this one where I come as the respondent. But if there were ever a case where this court should affirm a trial court judgment and affirm a court of appeals judgment and render judgment for my client Gulf Insurance Company, this is it. And I think it was summed up quite properly by Mr. Johnson in his argument where he said to this court, in retrospect, other findings would have cleared things up. Yes, as we look back today arguing before this court, if we had these other findings that talks about, that goes to the missing link that some of the justices were talking about during his argument.
So you weren't trying to trick the plaintiff either by making a stipulation that didn't?
Absolutely not. As far as I'm concerned, as far as Gulf is concerned, stipulations are a non-issue in this case. We wholeheartedly agree with Mr. Johnson that stipulations have very good uses in trial and that in this case they in fact streamlined the events of trial and we got around the burdensome tasks of stipulating to all the medical bills because at one point in time up until the stipulation, they were contested by a counter-affidavit that was filed by Gulf. So the stipulations worked in this instance. Every positive policy consideration that is associated with stipulations is present right
what
here.
What do you think you stipulated to?
The stipulated to that Mr. Clem Martin's expenses, all right, his damages, if you will, were $51,713.06. The stipulation went to damages, not to liability. In other words, damages now became a non-factor as far as the case was concerned, but as, and you all have seen the stipulation, it's in the petitioner's brief, there must be four or five different spots in that record, four or five pages, where Mr. Friend came up and said, as long as it's perfectly abundantly clear that we are not associating this injury with the cancer and that we're going to require that the plaintiff prove that this particular injury accelerated, aggravated, incited the cancer because it's undisputed that the injury didn't cause the cancer. Even the plaintiff's expert admitted that. Mr. Friend was very careful. It says as long as that is in dispute, in contest, something that the jury will decide, then we will stipulate to the amount of his damages as being $51,713.06. It goes solely to damages. Its purpose is to streamline the events and avoid everybody to go through the burdensome task of going through every single bill one by one and proving it up individually, which would have had to been the case because there was a valid controverting affidavit putting the amount of the medical bills in issue. So the stipulation worked perfect, but we keep on going back. What's the missing link? And everybody, I think, is clear that pursuant to the jury's answers to the charge, that they were not equating his injury with cancer. As far as the jury was concerned, the fact that there was no producing cause finding on total incapacity, no producing cause finding on partial incapacity, the evidence was clear that Mr. Martin was laid up in the hospital for over a week, that he quit work sometime in 1986 and never came back.
The jury found that reasonable medical care was necessary as a result of the injury.
That's right.
And that's sufficient to get damages, isn't it, as I understand under the compact?
Under the compact, yes. I would agree with that.
What did he give?
The way that he submitted it to the court and the way that he submitted his post-trial motions, he gets nothing. I would concede that the $40 or whatever was attributable to the January 20th, 1986 visit, had Mr. Johnson requested an issue and had the jury found so, or if he had gone to the trial court in his motion for judgment and even in the alternative say, at the very minimum, I want $40 for that January 20th, 1986 visit. If he did that, I don't think I could be here saying he's not entitled to his $40.
But, I mean, there was no request of two stipulations.
No, the stipulations were between Mr. Friend, Mr. Johnson, before trial, and it never went to the second stipulation that you're inquiring about. See, in essence, what happened was we're troubled here because we have this missing link. In other words, how can we adopt the plaintiff's argument to Mr. Martin's argument that his injury is the equivalent of cancer? Well, you just can't under this charge. And in a situation like this where the plaintiff's got the burden of proof, it's going to be the plaintiff who better submit those issues to the court. It's not, I'm not sure about what the effect of the first case is going to have on our special issue submission in Texas, but I doubt very seriously we're going to go to the point where defendants are going to have to propose in substantially correct form the plaintiff's issues in the case. If he wants to get his money, it's going to be up to him to present a charge to the trial court and have the court pass on it and either agree to submit the issues he's requested or reject it. And then he can come up here or the Court of Appeals on a submission of the charge issue. But as it went, we don't have the missing link. And as he said, in retrospect, other findings would have cleared things up. And
if he'd gotten the producing cause finding, you would have owed $40,000.
Yeah, no, if they had producing cause on either partial incapacity or total incapacity, I think it's clear that they would be entitled to the $51,713.06. There's no argument there because that would clear up. The missing link at that point in time would be known because in that instance, then it would have been a clear expression by the jury that this accident on December 10th, 1985, incited, accelerated, aggravated, excavated, what have you, his cancerous condition. And of course, under that, he would be entitled to benefits under the compact of his medical expenses. And not only that, he would be entitled to incapacity award as well. So the stipulations are a non-issue, is the position that we're taking here. They simply go to the amount of damages. They don't go to liability. I can't imagine how that distinction could have been made any clearer. There's four or five references to it by Mr. Friend in a four or five page excerpt from the record. Mr. Johnson got Mr. Martin on the stand. Do you understand that Gulf is not conceding that these expenses that were stipulated to are attributable to your injury? Yes, Mr. Martin, I understand that. That's an excerpt that's in the petitioner's application for writ of error. This record just can't be any clearer that the Gulf was contesting that liability aspect of the trial. And of course, when the jury comes back and says, we find that there was an injury, and we find that the injury required medical care, and we have evidence down there, uncontroverted. Mr. Martin testified about the pain he was going through during the holiday season 1985 into January 1986. Dr. Fralick talks about the January 20th visit. Cancer was the last thing on their mind at that point in time. And Dr. Fralick diagnosed it as something completely different. And it wasn't until months afterwards where he went to a doctor where his cancer was diagnosed. So there's no doubt about it that the fact that the jury came in and said that medical care was required from the December 10th, 1985 injury, they're talking about the January 20th, 1986 visit. So I'm here saying that, agreeing with Mr. Martin, that Rule 301 does not allow a trial court to disregard a special finding without a 301 motion or its equivalent by the by a party to the case. I'm saying that question number 8, the one about whether medical care was reasonably required, is completely immaterial. It wouldn't have had to been submitted at all. It's really, when you get right down to it, the fact that they answered question number 1, yes, I had an injury, that would entitle him to the medical expenses associated with that injury. But we can't take the next step and say the cancer was caused or incited or aggravated, accelerated, what have you, by the December 10th, 1985 injuries that were missing, that missing link. Furthermore, the reading of the charge of a whole, concentrating in on the producing cause findings, questions number 6 and 7, blow that argument completely out of the water. It's very clear that the jury did not equate injury with cancer, and that the trial court correctly entered judgment for Gulf, and the Court of Appeals correctly affirmed that judgment. I would point out to the court the Jackson case, Jackson versus USF&G at 689 Southwest 2nd, 408, and specifically directing the court's attention to page 412. This was a 1985 opinion out of this court, Texas Supreme Court, and in that case, under admittedly different facts and distinguishable factually, but the court came up with some language that is pertinent to this case. And they said, having held that the issues were susceptible to the interpretations of both the Jacksons and the court below, the law is clear we must affirm judgments below in this case. And the reason why, they state, you state, if the jury findings are ambiguous or unclear, the appellate courts must try to interpret the findings so as to uphold the judgment. And we have come before the trial court, the Court of Appeals, and now this court, and say, here is a logical explanation of the jury issues in this case. The evidence goes along with it. It is a reasonable interpretation. Whereas the Martins come in and say, no, that's not reasonable. Ours is, I guess, more reasonable, even though we don't have any type of jury finding or implicit finding by the court or a request for a finding of fact or anything done post-trial to try and clear up the missing link issue. The missing link issue was the reason why the trial court rendered judgment for Gulf at the trial court. It's why the Court of Appeals affirmed that judgment. And here we are today still talking about the missing link, and it still hasn't been satisfied. It's still out there. You read the charge, and it's clear that the jury was not equating Mr. Martin's injury with his cancer. And that's all I have to say. I'll answer questions if anybody has it, but I don't think there's anything more I can say about it.
Any questions? Thank you, Counselor.
very briefly, I'd point out that, again, Mr. Allen and Gulf have not addressed the fact that they stipulated that the initial visit was part of the treatment for cancer and that there was billed an issue. They stipulated to that, and they should be bound by their stipulation. That's all we're asking. Had they stipulated that everything else but the initial visit with Dr. Frelick was related to cancer, and again, we wouldn't be here. But they stipulated that everything was. And now they're talking out of the other side of their face, saying, no, the first visit was for injury treatment. That's what the jury found. That's contrary to the stipulation they entered into. And if they can get out of the stipulations, then the stipulations are of no effect and are of no good in streamlining cases.
What medical evidence do you have that links the injury to the cancer?
Dr. Frelick's testimony, Your Honor.
Yeah, he said what?
He said that, in his opinion, that the trauma itself aggravated or incited the cancer itself, the spread of the cancer.
Okay, did the jury buy that argument?
I don't know, Your Honor. All we know is the jury did not find incapacity. We don't know whether or not the jury bought that argument.
Is that the only liability issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, if he had cancer, he was pretty well incapacitated, wasn't he?
Well, not according to Mr. Friend's argument, Your Honor, and not according to Dr. Burns, who said that...
According
to Dr. Frelick, he was, yes. There was some evidence of incapacity.
If the jury bought it, wouldn't they find incapacity?
That's... Perhaps. Perhaps not, Your Honor. It wouldn't be the first workers' compensation case where they found an injury but no incapacity and found medical bills. Certainly not in Dallas or Collin County. It's not an unusual happening. Again, the problem with Gulf's position is the stipulation. They stipulated that Dr. Frelick's bills, among the others, were related to cancer, the treatment of cancer, that they were part of the $51,000. They can't get around that stipulation, and that's why we're here.
Any questions?
One last thing, Your Honor, I would point out that the courts have held that, with reference to stipulations, that they are to be Berlin versus State, site 475 Southwest 2nd, 241, wherein there the Court of Criminal Appeals stated that it is the rule that stipulations are reasonably and liberally construed with a view to effectuating the party's intentions. And again, the intentions we went into, that there was going to be one issue that Mr. Friend talked about and I talked about during the stipulation process, and that was whether or not bills were incurred as a result of the injury.
Any questions then? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
That concludes argument in the second clause. We'll take our final break. We'll be back, Rick.